Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of India as a Truth. First time on our program, I've been on her program, but first time on our program, we have Elizabeth Lane. She's an investigative reporter out of the U.S., formerly out of Georgia, and no, not the state of Georgia, the Republic of Georgia. But a short, funny story, my wife's from Georgia, and we went... After we got married, we went to a Christmas party. My friends, officer friends, were throwing, and one of them was like, "Yeah, this is Stassa's new wife. She's from Belize, Georgia. Who knows the capital of?" He didn't say Belize, Georgia. He said, and he's like, "The Republic of Georgia, not the state of Georgia." And who knows the capital of Georgia? And this one girl throws her arms up. "I know, I know, I know." She's like, "Okay, what?" "Ukraine." And she sits down with just pure pride. And my wife's just like, "I'm like, I told you, I warned you."
Oh, no.
Hello, dear friends. Just want to remind you, if you like this video or you like what you hear, click like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. Send it to your friends. Let's grow this channel. Maybe we can finally hit it up to 100,000. That would be a good round number for the summer. So let me know, leave some comments, and give a thumbs up. So look forward to seeing you in the next video. Cheers.
Something feels off. Same news, same noise, different day.
Maybe you're just in the wrong place, mate.
Wait, what?
Maybe you've been here before.
I was what? I am a Cossack.
Wait, I remember this. I was a merchant.
Okay, this is getting weird. I was a Russian musician.
Okay, this is NOT what I expected.
Yeah, happens to everyone.
We just moved. Moscow Connect helped with everything.
Visa, paperwork, life is sorted.
Wait, it's actually that simple?
Maybe it's not about escaping.
Maybe it's about finding where you actually belong.
Oh, that's funny. Ukraine, not even Kiev. Kiev, it's Ukraine. Ukraine, the country.
Yes, that's the capital of, that's not the capital of Georgia.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure. Love your stuff. You know, you did great job coming to my show and explaining Russia to my audience. So that was great. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. So how did you get to the U.S.? How did you become an investigative journalist? How's the experience been?
Yeah, I mean, I practically consider myself American. I've been here for a very long time now. I first moved here, I think I was 17 or 18, maybe visited before, like UN conference or something like that. And then I moved here to act. I actually wanted to be an actress.
Oh, really?
And funny enough, I did enough acting. People think that if you're not the super mega famous actor, you're not making money. You're actually making money if you stay consistent with the roles, right? Do some commercial, like a BMW commercial or something. I did one with Mobile Strike, do you know, with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that was fun. But yeah, you constantly keep yourself in this sphere of influence in Hollywood, and you're going to get your break, right? But when everything ended, it was actually at this Sundance Festival. It's a big, huge festival, one of the biggest in the United States when it gets to theater and movies. And we all know, actresses and actors, that we have to be there. If we want to make it, we have to mingle around these parties and, talk to people. So I got to know this producer, very influential producer. I'm not going to say who he is, but he's huge in Hollywood. And one day he calls me up and he's like, "Hey, I've got a role for you." And I'm a nobody. Like, I'm not a known actor or anything. So I'm like, "You got a role for me? Like, why?" And I'm thinking it's going to be third walking something with two words and you're done. So he goes like, "No, it's I wrote a role for you. It's the main character in this crazy sci-fi movie." I'm like, why would you do that? Like, for me? So then he makes an offer. He's like, "Well, if you come with me to shoot this movie in this island, you know, like with me, and I have a boyfriend back then. I'm like, what do you mean by with me? Like as a crew member? And he's like, no, as a girlfriend, like you and I. And I'm like, buddy, we're done here. So that was over.
This is the typical Hollywood, you know, you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And people think these stories are fake. These are not fake. Mm-hmm. Like, I experienced it, a known actress experienced it on myself. And it was not just me. I actually knew another girl who stayed behind. She was from Kazakhstan, which is very interesting. And, she chose to pursue that lifestyle. I chose to say no. I had a degree in law and international relations, so I was always like, my dad was like, if you want to be an actress, you can be an actress, but you're going to be a smart one. So, like, right. You can do whatever you want, but you have to get your studies. And that's where I decided I actually wanted to pursue something more meaningful. So I decided to work as a journalist. I had a radio show. I worked as a radio host with this cheesy, weird thing that we were doing. It was about music and DJs and... Very soon after, I moved to politics, and that's how I ended up where I am right now.
You know, I've got respect for what you chose. When that Me Too movement came out, I have no respect for any of these Hollywood movie starlets.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I had to sleep with him or I had to screw him or whatever to get my role.
Yeah.
But you got your role, and then you got your millions. Exactly. So what are you complaining? It was a business deal, right? So you sold your morality to get the role to become rich. And now you're trying to play the victim?
Shut up and be done with it.
Right. Exactly. Give back your Grammys or your Oscars. Give back your money and become and get on there on your abilities, not because you're willing to drop your dress or your pants and go to bed with some guy.
Exactly. And the best part
no
is
that.
That.
And they're 100%. Playing that I'm the victim. You're not a victim. You chose, as an adult, you chose a commercial deal, you know. You exactly. sleep with him and he gives you a role. That's a commercial deal. But that's the people you should feel sorry for. The people said no, we're not going to give up our morality, like what
exactly.
you did.
That's
the people
you
respect.
They are not Epstein victims either.
Yeah.
These girls who are out there, they knew exactly what they were doing. You know, some of them. We're invited in a hotel room. Okay, dude, excuse my language, but I have to speak like that because that's who they are. If you're invited in someone else's hotel room and you have a choice not to go up there, why would you do that? Why would you go up in a hotel room versus an office somewhere? Like, you do not know why you're invited in a hotel room, like somewhere in 5 stars on Beverly Hills, you know. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, like, all these famous actresses are coming out. They started coming out. You know,
yes.
Weinstein, he was a fat pig and whatever, but yeah, he gave you a proposition. You chose it. You got rich off of it. So there's no victim there.
Oh, I think he got a bad deal, honestly. Like, I am actually, I was the first one before Candace Owens picked up this story. I was the first one to say Weinstein got a rotten deal.
Oh, yeah.
He did not rape anybody. Not that he's a good person. He's a pig. He's a complete pig.
Right.
And he's part of the system. But show me a document that says that, or he's proven that he raped somebody, that he forced himself on someone. No, it was a deal. The guy was sexually frustrated. He would get naked, come out, and offer you sex. And you would say no. And he would be, like, very persistent. But he would not touch you. Like, he was just sexually frustrated pig. That was it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of real victims of Epstein, the children that they used, the mom, you know, 10, 12-year-old children, whatnot.
Which they won't talk about.
Yeah,
which they won't talk about.
Exactly.
Like, Me Too was huge, but this, let's not talk about this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, when Cry of Freedom came out, you know, no theater wanted to pick up that movie.
Like, you mean Sound of Freedom?
Or Sound of Freedom, I'm sorry, Sound of
Freedom.
You
know who made that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Well, my boss made that movie. My television, Unified TV, was an executive producer on it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, and they had a hard freaking time selling it. No one would pick him up. The only company that picked him up was Angel Studios. It is in Utah where I live. I know these guys very well. Like, no one would touch the movie. So you're right. Yes, nobody, because they knew it was true.
And that's why, you know, Gibson had to finance it. But yeah, it hits too close to the truth, you know.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk about it. But
yeah, so we are very proud of this. Yeah.
yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's really great. Because, you know, the Epstein, the Me Too movement. I mean, like I said, it's just so basically you're just telling the world that you're a rich prostitute that got really rich off of sleeping with that fat pig. But yeah. Again, you're both consenting adults exactly. Doing a business deal.
Exactly.
What am I missing here? You know.
Well, much worse thing happens in Hollywood. Like, people don't see it. Hollywood is a dirty freaking dumpster, you know, place where people only see $2,000 dresses or $10,000 dresses, and they think, oh my gosh, I want to be part of it. I got so sick of it. None of these people are happy. None of them. I have not met one single happy person in Hollywood, and I was there for years. Not one. They are happy temporarily with their money. So they throw a bunch of parties for 2 hours. They laugh, they get drunk, but they are empty inside, all of them. And I didn't want to be that. So I chose a real fight.
I've heard that from other people who left Hollywood. Yeah. I've heard exactly the same things. I've got one friend, he was a producer in Hollywood, and then he had a come to Jesus moment. He didn't come to Orthodox. Yeah. He went to Protestantism, but still, he had a come to Jesus moment. So he said, you know, he just said flat out, it was either, you know, I'm either going to hold my faith or I'm going to work in Hollywood, and I can't do both.
Right. That's true.
Did you see any of the Satanism, that kind of Hollywood, or just the emptiness?
No. You know, I didn't see any Satanism. I just saw very bad people. I saw people who hated their own siblings because they were too famous and they were not. And I saw people who, you know, you're not cool enough. You're not cool enough. Like, they would tell their own sister, you're not cool enough. You're not going to be on the red carpet with me. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Jeez. So terrible, terrible people. It's just shitty people. So yeah, one day, I decided, what am I doing here? Do I want to be part of this? Like, weird zombie, you know, part of groups that they have no brains. They just want to be like kids all the way through. They want to grow up, you know? So yeah, it's a bad game. So I don't, well, here's the thing. Hollywood has its positive side too. So if you go super high up, when you reach like Brad Pitt level, and somewhere like you are kind of untouchable, you can get clean. Then you can like do what Keanu Reeves does, which I met once. So he just detached himself completely. And he said, I don't want any of this mod part of it. Like, I'm going to do my own thing, right? Mm-hmm. Keanu is not the only one. Many actors were able to kind of detach and do their own thing. So if you get up high so that you are untouchable, then you can do that. And then you can make good movies. Kevin Sorbo was my guest. I don't know if you remember him. Do you remember Hercules?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a big show. So Kevin got canceled completely from Hollywood because he said, well, you know, I want to make movies that is Christian oriented. I don't want this weird like sex stuff anymore, transies and, you know, Russians are bad all day long. I don't want to do this. And they were like, okay, you're canceled. So yeah, they literally dropped him. They were like, you're no longer a cash cow. So
look at Nolan and Odyssey. First of all, I don't get this Africification of everybody's history.
Yeah.
I don't really understand sub-Saharan Africans have their own history. You don't see a white, blonde, blue-eyed Shaka Zulu running around.
Right.
Moves. Why are they trying to shove this down everybody's throats? I mean, there was a documentary the Swedish government did on the proto-Swedes, and apparently they were all sub-Saharan Africans. Look at all this, and it's just being
absolutely
pushed everywhere. The Egyptians sued over Cleopatra because you're rewriting our history. The Greeks look like they're going to be suing over Odyssey because you're rewriting our history. You're destroying our history. Why are they doing this?
Even the kids' cartoons, Ariel is white with red hair and blue eyes, right?
Yeah.
So even kids were like, that's not real Ariel. Disney flopped. Because even kids were like, well, I don't want to watch whatever this is because it's not Ariel. I remember we did an entire episode about this, like Disney's not idea that everyone should be black now, you know? So I don't know. I think it's a war on white Christians. It has been a war for a while in America now. I don't know what contributes to it. Like, I don't know why they decided now we have to just punish white people. So I have an extra rage when they tell me that I should feel, you know, sad because of slavery. And I always come back with, first of all, I was born in Georgia. Don't you fucking play that card with me. And second, even as American, it's like, okay, so my great-great-grandpa was a psychopathic maniac and killed somebody. Should I go to jail for it? Like, get lost, you know? Like this idea that we are, white people should be punished for, you know, for something. I don't know. Like for slavery, I guess, which is another misconception, because slavery started with blacks on blacks, actually. So it was black people who started selling other black people. That's how slavery started. It was not white people.
Well, so, slavery didn't start like that. Slavery started everywhere. There's not a single society
but we're talking about African Americans in America, right? So
it gets worse.
Yeah.
The African Americans in America, the first ones weren't sold by other blacks. They were sold by Arabs.
Exactly.
The Arabs were the biggest slave traders in the world at that time, of Africans, while we're at it. Interestingly enough.
Yes, but Africans sold Africans to Arabs on, and many others, right? But what's funny is that this comedian made a great joke. He's a black comedian, and he said, I don't know why you people don't like slavery. The only reason I'm in America is slavery. Like, do you think I want to be in Africa right now? Like, I'm actually blessed. He goes, like, in a way, like, I see his point. I know what he's saying. He's telling people, you guys are ridiculous, you know? So, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. When did you leave America, Stas?
I left, we moved back in 2010.
2010. Okay, so you wouldn't feel this.
Last time I was in the U.S. was in 2018.
Okay, so then you wouldn't have felt this crazy push on, you know, when black people are more racist than white people.
Oh, no, I know that.
Towards white people.
I grew up in the South. Black-on-black racism in the South was pretty prevalent on light-skinned blacks from dark-skinned blacks.
Totally.
Because they would call them high yeller. That was the name for high yeller. Because you know, your ancestors were either, you know, in the antebellum South, the pre-Civil War South, it wasn't uncommon to have mixed race children from these slave owners. And most of their kids were freed. I mean, not all of them, but a lot of them freed their kids. And there's actually not a small percentage of freed blacks, a lot of whom owned slaves themselves.
Right.
The biggest slave owner in Louisiana, she was an African that was brought over from Africa as a slave. Her family was separated and sold off. She was very smart because slaves a lot of times were allowed to earn extra money, and then they could buy their freedom. And she bought her freedom. She bought her family's freedom. Then she became a banker, loaning money to all these other plantation owners, and became the biggest plantation owner with the biggest number of slaves in Louisiana, probably, I think, Louisiana history. And then her kids spent all the money.
And then it went, you know, absolutely. And
the usual cycles. The kids that didn't earn the money spent it all.
Yeah. But, examples in New Orleans. Like, you could just go down in New Orleans and, you'll see a ton of examples of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
South Carolina, sure. I mean, Charleston, South Carolina, at the time of the Civil War, 20% of the population were free blacks. In South Carolina, the two biggest slave owners were two brothers who were, well, they were mixed because their mother had been, was black. I think she'd been a slave and she was freed by the owner and became his wife. And that wasn't that uncommon either. So it's not, pardon the pun, black and white. You know, it was a very gray zone there. And by the way, even in the South, you know, the term monkey, it wasn't used for blacks. It was used for Irish. Irish could be slaves too, but they were debt slaves, right?
Right.
And you used, as a quote, you used an Irish monkey to clean a swamp. Because you paid an Irishman $1 and if he a day, and if he drowned, well, he didn't earn his dollar. You don't put a $1,000 slave out there. He could drown or get bitten by snakes, whatever, and die. That's a big investment. You grab the Irishman. He's cheap. You know, if he gets, if a rattler exactly. or a water moccasin kills him, yeah, you know, okay, there's either Irishman.
Same. Yeah, we,
that
yeah,
was quite absolutely. Literally the attitude. I mean, that was, yeah. it's a very, the North wasn't that much better.
Yeah, I mean, slightly, definitely better than Deep South. Like, even now, Deep South is racist, but it's racist both ways, to be honest. Like, you know, blacks have this chip on their head, like, mm-hmm. on their shoulders. And, yeah, white people are semi-racist. Well, they are mostly racist towards Indians, to be honest, and other mix of people. Like, they just don't like, you know, anybody that's not white American, you know? Which, in a way, I mean, to be quite honest, I'm tired of immigration and immigrants myself. I was pro-wall. I supported Trump on that. I, you know, we are just sick of it. I would not have a problem with anybody's color or anybody's nationality if they came and assimilate. You know why Georgians don't like some of the things I say? I always say that the United States is my home and I'm most loyal to the United States. I'm not that loyal to Georgia because this is my home. This is where my friends are, my ex-husband, my current boyfriend, everybody that I love is here. So this is my home. And they were like, but you were born in Georgia. So, okay, you know, but I don't see you as home, you know, it's just like how it is. So I assimilated a long time ago and I'm more American than, you know, most Americans are. That's what everyone should do. If you're doing that, then I'm okay with you. It doesn't matter where you're from. But the problem is they are not doing that. That's the problem. They want to keep their faith. They want to keep their culture and still be American. Well, it doesn't work that way. I'm sorry. You know.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, I'm not against immigration. And, you know, I think that's by the way. That's the difference between a nationalist and an ultra nationalist. A nationalist says, "You know, mm-hmm. my country is the best. I want every child in the world to wake up and go, oh, I want to be, you know, like you." An ultra nationalist goes, oh, "My country is the best because we're racially superior, and all you are just scum of the earth." That's yeah. a big difference. It gets painted usually with the same brush. Immigration is not bad, but you have to keep it. A, you know, what do you need? You need engineers. Let's get engineers in. And B, it has to be in such numbers that they can be assimilated.
Well, also, such nations are, okay, can we agree on something? Not all nations are created equal, not on culture. All cultures are created equal.
Yeah.
Yes, and not all religions are created equal. There are certain religions are, you know, slightly more towards radicalism, lean towards radicalism, and slightly more empathetic, right? I feel like Orthodoxy is very empathetic religion. They are very non-interventionalist. They don't mm-hmm. even have like these people to go and, you know, knock on the doors and read you about their religion and, you know, so.
Oh, you mean like Jehovah's Witnesses?
Oh, or Mormons, right? I'm in Utah. Yeah. Like I get the knocks all the time. I'm Mormons part of the culture. So I guess what I'm saying here is you can't just import just anybody, right? Look what happened in France. I'll give you a French example. They imported a bunch of Arabs. They gave them lives. And these Arabs saw themselves as Arabs. They saw themselves as Muslim. They did Muslim things. They brought their culture. And then they had kids. And what happened in France when they had kids? These kids were not Arabs because they were partially French now. So they are assimilated in the culture because they were going in French schools, learning the language, meeting other white French, you know, kids. So now they feel like, okay, I'm French. But what did French people do? French people said, no, no, honey, you're not French. You're something else. You're not quite Arab either. So what happened then? Then they said, okay, well, if this group doesn't accept me and now Arabs don't accept me because I'm not quite them either, well, I'm going to make my own little, you know, kingdom here. And what did they do? They actually took the freaking, you know, cities and the districts and police doesn't go in there anymore. That is the result when you bring somebody that is so far away from your culture and you don't, you know, plan for assimilation. You don't have like a assimilation plan in place. Then you're going to get this weird mix of people who are not really French, but they are not really Arabs either because they don't see the world as Arabs anymore. And now you have somebody who's absolutely neglected and in the corner. And what are you going to do then? You know? And look what happened in France. They have a serious fucking problem right now. Excuse my language. Yeah.
You're right. Well, the problem with the French, with the Arabs that came in the 60s, is they weren't religious. They came into, and they wanted to assimilate, but the French refused to assimilate them. You're right about that.
Exactly. They put them in the ghettos. No plans whatsoever in place to make them French or their future generations.
Right. But it's not just because they're Arabs. I mean, look, I remember watching an interview with one of Sarkozy's opponents. Now, Sarkozy's father was Hungarian.
Mm-hmm.
Catholic, you know.
You mean Sarkozy, right?
Sarkozy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Sarkozy's father's Hungarian, and there was one of his opponents said, "You can't vote for him. He's not French." Sarkozy was born in France, served in the French military, lived all his life in France. His mother was French, but you know, and they bring this up at a political level. Well, he's not really one of us.
Exactly.
I mean, that says a lot about a culture that just can't assimilate people, even if they're, you know, they don't have to be Arab Muslim. It's Hungarian Catholic. He's not one of us.
Absolutely. And that's why I go back to not every culture is created equal. Some cultures are very rooted in their nationality, and you just can't erase that. It's not going to happen. So the same problem is, look at Palestine, Israeli, right? Like people. And in a way, to me, they are, if we zoom out, they are very similar to each other in a way. But you have very radical, I shouldn't say radical, but religion that could be radicalized very quickly on both sides. Not Muslims only. I think Judaism is one of the most radical religions in a way ever. So now you have two religions that both think are superior over other people. What Muslims don't think they are superior. They always thought they were superior. Religious Muslims always thought they were superior than Christians and anyone else. Guess who else thinks that? Well, Jews think that too. You know, if you're not a Jew, they don't want to mix their blood with you. So you have two great products that could be radicalized in different ways, trying to share a territory. It's never going to happen. It's going to be perpetual conflict. And that's exactly what you see in the Middle East. And if you can argue and say, well, it's an artificially created conflict, but yes, it is. But well, you can't create an artificial conflict without the right elements. And those elements are in place for you with Jews and, you know, Arabs, right? It's just how it is. Muslims, I shouldn't say Arabs, Muslims and Jews. So the same goes with French people. French people are the most uptight. They do not like to speak any other language. If you've been to France, you know this. You can talk to them in English, and what do? They respond in French. I'm a tourist. I'm not, you know, obligated to learn your language. I'm here to spend money. Accept me. They don't. They will respond in French. So this way, I boycotted France. I don't go there anymore. I'm like, well, whoever is willing to learn a language, they can go and enjoy your country, but I'm not. So, it's just cultures matter. And we started behind the scenes. We talked about Russians and how well Russia does this, right? Russians assimilate pretty well. Russians assimilate everywhere, actually. Russians assimilate in America, and they accept other nations in Russia as well. At least that's my opinion. Would you agree?
Yeah, we have creeping Russification. People assimilate without noticing they're assimilating. I have a French friend. He's now got Russian citizenship, and we were working together. And he's like, you know, I think I may move back to France. I'm like, you know, you've been here. I'm not gonna say his name, but it's like you've been here for 6 years. You're not gonna fit back in. It's like, you know, you're right. Last time I was in France, all I did was defend Russia, and they're all wrong, and blah, blah, blah. It's like you have creeping Russification. People don't even notice it, but they just get absorbed into the culture. So, it starts with tourism.
I think they are shocked. They are shocked because they see Russia as this, like, dark entity and enemy, and Americans woke up to it. They don't see it that way anymore. But Europe
still
does.
Well, there's still some that do, unfortunately.
Some. Yeah.
And the neocons being part of that.
Of course. But most Americans around me right now, and I interact with a lot of different, you know, different birds in politics, and they know that Russia is not what's been peddled to them. So, yeah, that's a good start, I think.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of money spent on there's been a lot of money spent on making Russia the enemy. You know, amongst the evangelicals, particularly the Christian Zionists, they hate Russia because it's been beaten into their head that Russia is the Antichrist.
Yes.
And the CIA did a very good job of that back in the 50s and the 60s, because back then the evangelicals were looking at Washington as the place of the Antichrist. I think they were more correct back then.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And now they're like, oh, Russia's going to be the Antichrist. We don't know why, but it's going to be the Antichrist. You know,
Well, the crazy thing is, I guess, Zionist, if you're talking about Christian Zionist, I understand why. Although Jews, like, they don't even believe in that. They don't even believe in Messiah as, like, Jesus coming for the second time, right? For them, it's just the Messiah. It's not going to be Jesus. They don't recognize Jesus at all. So that means they don't really recognize Antichrist or anything biblical, because their belief is that next time we see God, it's going to be the Messiah and that's it, which is weird because that would put all Christians against Jews. How would it not? So we see our future in the second coming is the Antichrist is coming first, right? So he's going to act like God. So he's going to perform miracles and all that. Well, that God is Jewish only God. So you're going to see him as the Antichrist. They're going to see him as their God. So if you go against their God, they will kill you. I mean, literally, like, explain to me how this is going to go down in any other way. For them, they're going to see it's our God, and some crazy Christians are trying to kill him. For us, we are prophesied that for Orthodox Christians, it's going to be an Antichrist, so you better fight him, right? How do you see this going for us and Jewish people? Probably not the best.
Well, the Christian Zionists, they need Israel. I mean, if you ask the average Christian Zionist, like, they're all damned to hell. But first, they need to start Armageddon so we can teleport up. Right? That's okay. Even Jewish Zionism, to traditional Jews, Jewish Zionism is a heresy. So you got Jews that lived. They're still. I mean, you can watch some of the interviews with some of them that lived or were born in those areas before Israel was established. And you know, they say, yeah, I had Christian friends, I had Muslim friends, we just went to each other's houses, we lived in peace. And then the Europeans came.
Exactly.
And everything got turned upside down.
Well, Zionism is an artificially, fakely created ideology. Of course, you know about the Scofield Bible, right? That's how they brainwashed the American nation. So yeah, it's a fake ideology. It's there to divide people, nothing else. And I feel like the biggest victims of this are actually going to be Jewish people. I'm sorry, but it's true. Because the hatred of Jewish people already is very prevalent in America, and you can see that, and it's really hard to argue with that, because what are you going to tell a white American that is seeing some IDF soldiers smashing Jesus' face? What are you going to tell him? Oh, don't hate this guy? No, he's going to hate this guy. You know, it's just how it is. And it's really hard to make people understand that all this is just politics and you're buying into it. But you know what? Jewish people should speak up more, I guess, which we have not seen. In fact, every single one of them that come out and say something, they are like, well, it's anti-Semitic. No, it's not. Maybe you'll be more respected if you actually come out and say, I don't know what powers play behind this. I don't know what their goal is. But as a Jew, I oppose Zionism. That's where you stop. You
see that, but it's in small groups. I mean, you see, I think you've seen a lot more of that in the U.S. and particularly in the young generation.
Dave Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just Bloom and Smith, you see it in the younger generation. The old generation is absolutely Zionist. Well, not everybody, but the majority of them.
Many,
sure. I've got some Jewish friends that they look at Israel like, oh my God, what the hell? I'm not talking Russian Jews. Russian Jews, for the most part, most of them look at Israel and go, holy crap, these people are psychotic. Just like most Russians look at Israel.
Yeah, but why is it that so many Russians are in Israel? See, I never explain. I could never explain that.
Well,
Russian people are flooding Israel.
Well,
why?
No, they're not flooding anymore.
Not anymore? Where did they go?
First of all, flooding, you know, there was about 4 million people, but a lot of those were Russian Jews, and they were brought over, they were bribed over. They were quite literally given money for arriving. And if you decide you want to leave, pay back the money. Oh, you can't pay back the money, then you're not going anywhere.
That was serious? They asked for money?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hold on. You gotta break that down for me because I've never heard of that. Like, if they leave,
when
they
you arrive in Israel, you know, I knew had a friend. His best friend was Jewish, Russian mm-hmm. Jewish. So Soviet Union collapses. They're both in the army, and his friend's like, listen, you know, if you go to Israel and you're a Jew, they give you money. I'm just gonna go down there, buy a bunch of things, and come back. You know, I'm not even telling my mother I've left. And they were both in the military. He leaves for the weekend, right? For takes a week vacation, goes down there. He's 19. You know, they're 19. They're not exactly too smart. He goes down there, gets a bunch of money for arriving. And they, by the way, a lot of, at that point, when you arrived, they started forming your citizenship. You didn't have to ask for it. They just did it automatically. Mm-hmm. And he tries to leave. He's bought a bunch of souvenirs, a bunch of goods. This is 1993, 1992. He tries to leave, and like, well, no, you've immigrated. He's like, no, I haven't. I don't want to go back to Russia. Like, we'll pay back all the money. He's like, well, I can't. Well, then you're not leaving until you can either pay back all the money. Yeah. So go get a job. And then, you know, his mother's calling all the police. My son's been kidnapped. Where's my son? And then he winds up calling his mother after weeks, like, I'm stuck in Israel. You know, and he wound up having to stay because he had to pay back, either had to pay back the money or, you know, and he couldn't without a job. And then they just suck you in that way. It's just like when they do that rite of return for the kids to come in there. They do a trip to Israel. There was an interesting documentary out that the IDF sends very sexy people to be in these groups. for a reason. To have sex with these students to pull them in.
Right.
They use sex to pull them in.
Well, the sexual blackmail is Israeli card. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, of course. They are sexually blackmailing everyone because they, you know, they are, it's weird. The culture itself of Israel is very objectively sexual.
Oh, yeah. And it's the biggest, it's a gay LGBT capital of the Middle East is Tel Aviv.
Absolutely. And also they are the probably the only nation that never, ever, not even once, ship pedophiles back to where they belong to actually answer for their crimes. So if you're a pedophile and if you run to Israel, they are not going to hand you back.
If you're a pedophile of the right nationality.
Right. Of course. Yeah. If they don't care about, like, you know, Arabs and Muslims, they don't care about that. But if you're American and if you're British and if you're, of course, you will be protected in Israel for sure, which is terrible.
Look, you know, the chief rabbi of the IDF had said that, you know, it's rape only if it's a Jewish woman is the victim.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, no, it's still rape. I mean, when the Red Army came into Germany, you know the legend of the Soviet Army raped every woman from 7 to 70. Yeah. No, rape was punished by summary execution. And one of my grandfathers was a captain in the Armor Corps that took part in taking Berlin. He summarily executed a lieutenant for raping a German woman. You know, there was no tolerance for that. It happened. I mean, of course it happened.
Yeah.
But you know, you have millions of men coming in war. But it was punished extremely punished. I mean, summary execution. There was none of this, it's only rape if it's not a... if you're raping a German woman, it's a rape. No, there was never anything like that. But you get that from that side.
No, I bet in Israel it would be rewarded. If you rape the right person, it is rewarded in a way. I mean, did you see what happened with the freaking prisoners? Like, it is rewarded.
Rapes?
Yeah.
They're using dogs to rape prisoners?
Yeah. They are mentally ill people. They are mentally ill people. And I never go this, like, general on nation. You know, bad and good is everywhere. It doesn't matter what kind of nation you are, you know, what city, what country, it doesn't matter. But I can say with all certainty that Israel right now is a terrorist state, period. Yeah. Period. Yeah. It is a terrorist state. They are committing terrorist acts, and it's a just ginormous terrorist organization. Yeah.
The government,
if I was in Florida, Stas, I wouldn't be able to say that. I would be arrested. Oh, look. I'm so glad that I'm in Utah. Isn't that crazy? Even free speech. No, I'm serious. They are punishing. If you boycott Israel, you're going to go to prison. Well, jail. If you go against Israel in Florida, there will be punishment. They will come at your door and they will warn you to shut up and so on. I mean, you know, it's Netanyahu's son's stepping grounds. And, you know, he's always there in Florida. It's just, it's very sad, but it's true.
Well, Netanyahu's son is living for Israel. He's not going to go die for Israel.
Of course not.
He's living for Israel in his little Miami or big Miami apartment, drinking Mai Tais and, you know, he's going to live for Israel.
Yes.
Somebody's going to be there at the end.
Yeah. No, I mean, Netanyahu will always have some type of, you know, protection in America, no matter what he does. He's a declared criminal. He's an official criminal. And, I mean, he's meeting the President of the United States, what, every other month? Sometimes twice. Yeah, so.
Well, the scary part is in Yahoo, it's the opposition's even worse.
Oh, yeah.
The opposition's not better. They're even worse. They're even more psychotic. They're screaming for even more mass murder.
I did a post on X. I said, imagine a country where the leader of the country loves to kill and destroy and, you know, the bomb children and schoolgirls. And imagine that country's opposition that is even worse than that. I mean, that's
you're not killing enough schoolgirls. You got to kill more schoolgirls.
Exactly. Yeah. It was not enough. Yeah. I don't know how to deal with Israel because they have nukes. This country is a permanent cancer. And it's really hard when you have a tiny little country with multiple nukes, not just one, multiple nukes. And then you have ginormous superpower backing it up. What are you going to do about Israel? Nothing.
Well,
that's the answer.
You know, with Massey having been forced out, who do we have left of the in Congress, Republican, that's not fully
Ro Khanna. Well, not in Republican side, but Ro Khanna is huge opponent to Israel. They're probably going to take care of him, too, at some point.
Well, you've got Rand Paul.
Rand Paul. Here's the thing. I like Rand Paul on so many things. But Rand Paul is a guy who talks and then he votes exactly how they want him to vote.
Oh, really?
So, so I'm sorry, but he's not
going to,
he's not going to be any real opposition. That's why he's been there way longer than Messi, because, you know, Rand Paul is not a threat to them. And think about why do you think they ousted Messi? What was the reason? What was the real reason? Well, do you really think that he was any kind of... No, the real reason was the ideology. So Messi was not efficient. He's a great congressman, one of the best ever. But he always got outvoted, always. Like, his weight was not enough. He was just one man. Every time he voted against something, it still got passed. No one cared. He had no real power to change anything. So the question is, why spend $35 million to oust the guy who's never even a problem for you? All he does is like, you know, like he's just a squeaky wheel. So why is it that you're so bothered that you need to get him out of the race and completely out of Congress? For what? Like, he's not really changing anything. You know why? It's the ideas. They are afraid of Messi's ideas. And they know that you can kill a man, you can take them out, but you cannot kill a freaking idea. And they are scared because Messi's loud, because he has all the right ideas, because he taught Americans, you don't have to be a Republican and you don't even have to be a Democrat. Look what we did with Ro Khanna. He's a Democrat, I'm a Republican, and we are really good friends. We stand by each other and we are a team. That's what you need to be. And they got terrified when they saw that. They realized that if division is not part of American society, we cannot control this monster. The U.S. is huge, and it has a huge population. So if people like Charlie Kirk, people like Messi and Ro Khanna are doing their own thing, even if they are ineffective now, there will come a time when they will be effective. And speech is everything. What does the Bible say, Stas? How does the Bible start? In the beginning, what was there again?
The word.
The word, exactly.
Yep.
So it matters. It matters big time.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I guess in this case, the Republican Party, the Democrats haven't quite caught up. They're almost there. But I think the Republican Party can register as under the foreign agents law. Yeah, as a foreign entity.
Yeah.
They're fully owned. They represent somebody that's outside.
Absolutely. Yes, and not just them. Like, you should look into all these, like, NGOs and even the companies that are registered under FARA. One of them was used by Georgian opposition. I think it was Mulligan firm. Yes, that was paying off, donating. I should not say paying off. Donating to people who are super pro-Ukraine and super pro, you know, Georgian opposition and so on, I guess, ironically. So, yeah, that's very real in America. You can buy Congress for sure.
Oh, well, you know, speaking of NGOs, I mean, Georgia and Armenia, I think, are the most extreme cases of NGOs. But they may be worse. But I remember
Where?
Georgia had 10,000 NGOs for a population of 3.5 million. Armenia is somewhere right along those lines, too. I mean, they flood you with these organizations. They actually become a sector of your economy because there's so many of them. And then they try to take control of the country that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're NGOs. I mean, they're non-government, except they're absolutely funded by somebody's government.
100% USAID, right? We know the CIA's control over USAID, and CIA, they surely was USAID. I mean, when Trump came in power, he had all the right ideas, at least up until he was brainwashed by all these, like, neocons and Zionists. But he went after USAID because he knew that was, you know, a real thing. CIA used USAID. Every former CIA officer that I interact with, and I have many friends, including John Kiriakou, I mean, we had hours of conversations about this. Like, they know this because they were part of the system. We use these organizations, NGOs, to peddle American agenda in every freaking country and sometimes to get them to revolt. And those revolutions were real. Well, Georgians are they got smarter. They are no longer under this NGO control, even though Europe is still pretty powerful. Like, Americans kind of gave the control to Europeans when it gets to Georgia, and Britain is huge right now. But I mean, Georgians at least know that they are ill with them. You know, they know the illness. They understand it. Armenia is completely gone. Armenia is, like, on the other side right now. So I don't know if there's anything that anyone can do. Unless Pashinyan is moved away, you know. So, yeah, Georgians are trying to save themselves, but it's a small country. They are going to need some help, you know?
Yeah, these NGOs, you know, one of the things that Soros and company did early on, you know, back in the 80s, I mean, they're evil, but they're not dumb. They started rewriting people's textbooks. They start producing history textbooks, not physics or science or chemistry. You really can't do anything with that. But sociology, history, culture, they just started rewriting textbooks. And flooding the markets. You know, Russia, until about 4 years ago, still had over a dozen different history textbooks floating around the school system. And some of them were extremely falsified. Some were better. They finally came up with a unified history textbook for all the classes that the government... those government-sponsored textbooks, so that's the official one now. But yeah, so you warp people's cultures and create a whole new society that you can then control.
Yeah, no, it's real. And in here in the U.S., people wholeheartedly believe that the United States won the World War II.
I know.
And that pisses me off. Because I'm like, you understand, my grandpa fought in that war, right? My great-grandpa, not my grandpa. And it pisses me off, and I'll never forget. It was someone's birthday, and I'm invited on this birthday party, and I show up, and somehow it's me and a Russian next to me. I never met this Russian before. He was just from Russia. And we are sitting right next to each other. And somehow the topic is World War II. I don't know how we got there. And the entire table around us starts talking about how America won that war and blah, blah, blah. And I'll never forget, me and the Russian look at each other like this. And he goes like, just let it go. Just let him have this. Just let it go. Like, he knows I'm from Georgia. And we are like, I'm thinking, we shouldn't let it go. Like, we should say something, you know? Let them win. I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. So I get up and, guys. So, yeah, it was a whole argument. But look at what happened in Europe. I think it was Memorial Day, right? When they said, our sacrifice in America liberated us. And I'm like, no, actually, it was Soviet army that was in Berlin first and liberated Berlin. What the heck are you talking about? You know, but it's real. They are literally erasing Soviet role in World War II completely, which is crazy.
You know, I disagree with that, the way it's said. You know, we liberated Berlin. We didn't liberate Berlin. We conquered Berlin. We didn't liberate Romania. We conquered Romania. Because those states...
They say liberate. They say liberate. They like to say that. You know why? It frees them from the guilt.
Yeah.
It frees them from the guilt. And they say, well, we were liberated from the Nazis. No, honey, you were Nazi.
Yeah, like, you were the Nazis.
You were Nazi. Exactly.
We liberate. You could say we liberate Poland. We liberate Czechoslovakia, the countries that were absorbed, forcefully absorbed. But the countries that willingly went in, it's like, no, gentlemen, you know, we helped liberate Greece. So we helped liberate Yugoslavia. Yeah, we did it. These other countries, no, gentlemen, we conquered you. You were the enemy.
Exactly.
You were the enemy. We didn't. And then, you know, the best way I've heard it put, the Germans owe us forever. Not because of what they did in the Soviet Union and did primarily to Russians, but because what we didn't do to them. I mean, if the Red Army came in and exterminated every single German, at any age in 1944, 1945, nobody would have said a word.
You want to get real about this? So you probably know that Union Bank funded the Nazis all the way through the war, right?
Yep.
And then the U.S. gets in, tied up with the conflict, and you would think that these elite members like Avril Harriman, who used to be an ambassador to the Soviet Union, by the way, and he was not just an ambassador to Soviet Union, he was like Elon Musk of its time, right? He was a billionaire. He owned like railway stations, he owned banks, he was a mogul, he was the elite. These guys funding Nazis while his country's fighting Nazis, meaning the United States of America. And FBI, back then, Hoover was just an agent. He was not the director of the FBI first. Like, FBI was just being formed into what it is today. And they realized that this Union Bank and some elites are funding Nazis, even though the country is in war. And they go and seize the assets. It's like real history. They froze the assets of Union Bank under Trading with the Enemy Act. And it's like, you know who else was, by the way, partnering up with... Avril Harriman in the bank? You want to know?
Go ahead.
Bush Senior's father, Prescott Bush.
Prescott Bush was money laundering for Hitler through 43.
But for sure. And his son got to be the president, and his grandson got to be the president.
His son got to be the head of the CIA, too, while we were at it.
For sure.
By the way, his
and
son was fighting
it.
The Germans. His son was in the air. Bush Senior was in the airborne.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
His daddy's so money laundering for Hitler.
100%. And this is documented history. I mean, Smedley Butler is a real history, right? You know about Smedley Butler?
Oh, of course,
you know
of
about the plot, right? So what's crazy, though, is this is the constant fight I always have. Whenever we talk about Stalin, Soviet Union, Americans see red as like, that's it. Like, it's worse than Hitler. It's a real thing. They see Stalin as worse than Hitler.
No.
I went on Julian Dory's show. I explained to Julian what's really going on. They don't want to hear, they don't want to believe it, right? So, but here's an interesting thing. All of them have the problem with Stalin because they were like, well, during Yalta conference, Stalin got everything. And, you know, I was like, hold up. So you're saying that country that lost 27 million in war, mainly fought on the ground, mainly was Soviet Union who fought on the ground. And thanks for, like, you know, your food and some supplies from the U.S. You know, thank you. Very grateful, right? So you got into this war very late, in the latest stages. And you think that the United States had a say in Yalta conference? Are you crazy? Like, maybe Brits had a say. Maybe some other countries, allied countries. Who the heck are you to demand half of the world when you got into war, when it was over? Who are you to demand half of the world? And why should Stalin not get the satellite states? Like, did he get anything he didn't deserve? In fact, I think he was an idiot to agree to what he agreed. He should have taken it all. He should have said, we lost 27 million, we fought the main war. Thank you for your help. You get whatever you deserve, but we take it all. And he didn't do that. So, and they have a problem with the tiny little freaking satellite states that Stalin got. Are you kidding me? You know? And with the partial Berlin, they have a problem with that. To me, that's ridiculous. Do you think that if, God forbid, if something like that happened now and the U.S. led the effort in war, the U.S. was the main driver, do you think any other country would get anything out of the end result other than the United States? Nothing, correct?
Well, it's even worse because the satellite states that Stalin got, he didn't get. He converted those only after NATO's formed. Let's not forget, NATO's formed in 49. Warsaw Pact was formed in response to NATO.
Exactly.
But in 48, Stalin asked to join the NATO as it was being formed. Mm-hmm. He didn't quite get at that point that it's being formed against you. You know, thanks for asking to join him, but you're the enemy now. All of that could have been avoided. Stalin was ready if they set up a comprehensive security agreement for Europe. And the very first set up the comprehensive security agreement for Europe was Nicholas II.
Yeah.
Back in the 1880s.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Why do you think that Russians never get it? Like, why do you think that is that Russians always come up with the shortest freaking stick and they always buy into this? I mean, take Trotsky, right? Where was Trotsky? Where do you think Trotsky came from? Like, Bolshevik Revolution was an orchestrated deal on Russia, okay? So where was Trotsky, I'm asking you? Where do you think Trotsky was
Do
you know where he was? I'll tell you where he was. I know his history very well.
Yeah, he was in New York City.
He doing in New York City?
He was an editor of a newspaper, and he was in three silent movies. And then he also had a chauffeur, refrigerator.
And the refrigerator. And all of a sudden he goes to Canada with a bunch of money and he gets arrested and the documents are actually very accessible. Like, he literally gets arrested with a ton of money. And you know who frees it? Frees Trotsky?
It's not
Canadian authorities. It was Britain.
It was Woodrow Wilson, too. Woodrow Wilson, by the way, made sure Trotsky got U.S. citizenship before he left.
For sure, it was his signature, like his stamped signature, but Britain was very much into it because if not for Britain, he would be arrested for good in Canada. And then all these countries like maneuvered Trotsky right up towards Russia to oppose the Tsar and conduct a revolution. And of course, Lenin always gets this like freeway here somehow that he was like not part of this shit. No, he was. Like, Lenin and Trotsky are, you know, both propagandists, or both of them are. What I always wanted to know, and I'd rather, like, you're Russian, you probably have a different perspective. I always wanted to know how big of a part Stalin played in this and if he even understood what was going on. Do you think he understood it?
Of course. Look, the Russian Civil War didn't end in 1922. The Russian Civil War ended when the Trotskyites, it just changed. So the Russian Civil War went from the Reds fighting against the Whites, the Greens, the Blacks, and the not-so-heavy Reds. Because you had Socialist Revolutionaries and other groups like that they were fighting against also. And then it became... The war went internal, and it went in purges. You know, after Lenin died, it became the power fight between Trotsky and Stalin. And Stalin, at the end of the day, Stalin was a nationalist, and Trotsky was a globalist.
Yes, yes,
that's
absolutely.
The key difference. Stalin wasn't out for world revolution; Trotsky was.
The neocons are Trotskyites.
So, you know, Trotsky wasn't sitting in Mexico City twiddling his thumbs. So I always say
Stalin was a toxic patriotist. Like, he was a patriot, but he was a toxic patriot, right? Because he thought that anything goes for your country. Nah, actually, it's not like that. But yeah, Stalin's a very controversial figure for me. I mean, to me, he was a monster, but he was a necessary monster. And he did what he needed to do to defeat a bigger monster. But yeah, you're right. He was a nationalist and he was a patriot and he was a very toxic patriot. I think Russia deserved better. But at that stage, You know, by the way, I always give Stalin to Russians. When they ask me, like, where Stalin was from, I was like, well, he's from Russia, of course.
Then you definitely were
no,
never.
I've heard he was from Georgia. Yes, yes.
don't talk to the Gorians, because, no, Stalin's ours. Stalin's ours.
Really? Gory people Gory. Like Stalin?
Oh, yeah.
Shit, really?
Oh,
I didn't
Gory.
Know that.
The Stalin, you haven't been to the Stalin Museum in Gory? It's been re-renovated. It's up to date.
As a kid, like
no, that was it was worn down. You know, first time I went to the Gory Museum, I wasn't even going. We were just driving by. We were going somewhere else. I said, okay, let's go in. The woman it was me and my wife went in there, and the woman that was selling tickets. I mean, this is 2002, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman was selling tickets. You know, there's no lights. Everything was switched off. It's just like, wait a minute. And she runs down. You hear her scream call, switch the lights on. Russians have arrived.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. We were the only two people in this museum. I mean, this museum, they kept the person. They switched the lights on. Only people showed up. This museum was, the museum's
crazy.
Been absolutely renovated. Tons of people, but it was Europeans mostly.
Right.
Tons and tons of people coming in. I was there a year ago, took one of my kids. I had a friend of mine from New Zealand who was in Georgia. We were just vacationing in Georgia. He was there too. So we went to see the Stalin Museum. I was like, wow, huge crowds, right?
Really?
And everything's been re-renovated. Everything's tip top. Like, wow, that's a big difference. That's, 20 years ago, that was, don't tell the Gorians that. They'll get very, very upset. Oh, and then the souvenir sellers, everything was Stalin. Stalin on whatever object you can imagine, there's a picture of Stalin on it, and they're selling it.
It's weird. Like, old generation in Georgia actually like Stalin very much. They do, too. And it's not just Russians. Some hate him, some love him. But, yeah, I have mixed feelings. I believe that he was a monster, but he was the necessary monster. I don't think that anyone can fight a force like Nazism and Hitler if you're a good guy. You just have no chance, you know? So you have to be a very cunning person. You have to see through what's going on, you know?
I've got to get off to do another call.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But let's end on this as far as monsters go. The pride of democracy, William Churchill, he starved 6 million Indians to death. And I don't know how many hundred million just starved but didn't die. Because he stole all their rice and fed the British Isles back in 43. So, and Churchill ran concentration camps. And torture chambers all over the colonies, the British colonies. So, but he's remembered as, the great champion of democracy and all that.
For sure. Well, I mean, I agree with you fully, and I think Russians need to be ready. I honestly believe that you guys have a serious enemy out there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who these people are.
Epstein
but
elites.
They will not. Yeah, they won't stop. They will not stop until they see Russia absolutely dismantled.
Absolutely.
They tried in the 90s, and they will try it again. So you got to brace yourself.
They tried a lot. They've been trying since 1012 AD, the first pan-European invasion. They've been trying for a while. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining. Everybody, thank you, and leave some comments for Elizabeth, and we will get back, and we'll continue later. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.